This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Way on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Good evening. You're listening to World Wide Wave, the show that goes around the world one country at a time. You're listening to Dean, that's my name, and I'm here with Sarah.
Hi.
And with Damien.
Hello.
We are going to focus tonight on a country I don't think we've done before, because it's not really a country. It's actually part of the Commonwealth of the USA. The USA does have Commonwealth, not even states. They're not really states.
Yeah, they've got a strange term for what they call them, kind of mild territories.
Yeah, it's like it's a Commonwealth, but it's not like our Commonwealth.
Where are we going, Dean?
Tonight, we are going to Puerto Rico. So we are focusing on the winner of over a dozen international festival awards, Mala Mala. It's a documentary that's been a popular hit with audiences worldwide who have embraced its look at the lives of nine trans-identifying people in Puerto Rico. Covering a wide spectrum of age and experience in its subjects, this fascinating documentary explores the highs and lows of identifying as trans in a country where a macho Latino culture holds sway. Now, Mala Mala is showing this year at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival in April, but for an insight into the experience of making this film and life for trans people in this tiny USA Commonwealth, we spoke to co-directors Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini. Here is a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
Appearance is only one part of how a man expresses his masculinity in a place like Puerto Rico. Gender is embedded so deeply in the culture and in the religion of that most people practice in the culture.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
A lot of exciting news in Saudi Arabia this week, of all places. Saudi Arabia, as you know, is that lovely country that America buys lots of oil off, that has a place called, colloquially, Chop Chop Square, where they dismember people in public for breaking various laws. So they do have, as you can see, a slightly different legal system to Australia. And there's been a couple of stories from them this week. First one is a man in Saudi Arabia has been arrested for flying a rainbow flag at his home, according to CNN Arabic. Now, one would think that it would be madness to do so in Saudi Arabia, because participating in or showing support for homosexuality is not only illegal in the country, but is punishable by death. I will clarify that showing support for homosexuality is enough to get you a trip to Chop Chop Square. So the man is a doctor from Jeddah, and he was unaware that the flag symbolized LGBTI pride. He purchased the flag online after his children found its colors to be pretty. Unfortunately, shortly afterwards, the Committee for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice, and they're the Saudi Arabian Religious Enforcement Body, kind of like the religious police, arrested him at his home. Now, he faced an investigation by the committee, but was later released on bail after agreeing to take down the flag. Oh, dear.
That's amazing. I wonder if he was backtracking after buying the flag, or if it really was an accident.
I have to say that I completely believe him. I honestly think he would have had no idea. And he probably bought it from an English language website and could read the numbers. So he could, oh, it's $20, no worries, and was able to pay for it, but had no understanding of what the meaning was, mainly because it is a country where they do not muck around about things like that.
And also no one would ever see it, because it's never been shown flown out of a window
That's exactly it. So some nosy neighbour was walking past and went, oh, I better call the Committee for the Prevention of Virtue and Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, does it? Now, the second story this week on Saudi Arabia was a published report indicates that people who come out online in Saudi Arabia could soon face the death penalty. Now, this doesn't mean sort of in person, this means online. Now, a Saudi newspaper reported on the weekend that prosecutors, again in the city of Jeddah, have proposed the penalty in response to dozens of cases they have prosecuted over the last 6 months, and this include 35 people who received prison sentences for sodomy. They could get upgraded. So they've also prosecuted about 50 cases in which men allegedly dressed as women. So the enhanced penalties that prosecutors have proposed would apply to the entire country. Social media users in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere have begun to use the hashtag #YouWillNotTerrorizeMeI'mGay on Twitter to express their opposition to the proposed penalties. Saudi Arabia is one of the few countries in which consensual same-sex sexual activity remains punishable by death.
Yeah,
it gets worse. The U.S. State Department...
Can it?
It's crazy. The U.S. State Department's 2014 Human Rights Report has noted that it's illegal for men to behave like women or to cross-dress. And because of that Committee for Promotion of Virtue that we talked about before, the religious police, they go undercover. They use undercover agents to target owners of social media accounts that distribute pornographic content or serve as a social networking tool for LGBT persons in the kingdom. Basically, everyone in the building in which we are now sitting would be sent to the chopping block. Now, they've arrested many people. A judge in the Holy City of Medina in 2014 sentenced a man to 3 years in prison and 450 lashes for soliciting sex with other men on Twitter.
Wow, I think I've heard enough.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not great. And the US, though, gives more than $1 billion in aid to Saudi Arabia each year.
In other news outside of Saudi Arabia, Indonesia again. A region in Indonesia's northern province, Aceh, has told local beauty parlors to stop employing LGBT people, specifically openly transgender people. And religious leaders have voiced concern over the influence such employees may have on young people. Indonesia, with a population of 250 million, is home to more of the world's Muslims than any other country. And Aceh is Indonesia's most northern province. Since 2001, it's been allowed specific autonomy and is allowed to make its own laws based on the Islamic Sharia.
Now, obviously, a lot of transgender people work in the beauty industry, and apparently Sharia police have been known to raid trans-owned beauty parlors in the past. Can you imagine? You're getting your tips done, and suddenly the doors are kicked in, and truncheons are being thumped on tables and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, I hate to think how they try and make people show whether they're...
Actually, this leads to other horrible questions. But trans people are fighting back, aren't they, Sarah? They're not happy with it.
Yeah, it's great. The LGBT advocates have been talking about it. They're saying working at beauty parlors is the only skill we have. If we're not allowed to work, what should we do for a living? Dina, a transgender employee at a beauty parlor, told the Jakarta Post, "There are many reasons why transgenders prefer to work at beauty salons. Aside from skills, many customers prefer to be handled by transgender staff."
Another one said, "We do not have many job opportunities. This is too much. How can they just ban it?" Now, Indonesia's popped up a few times on our show in the last couple of months.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about them and a lot of crackdowns on LGBT rights.
Yes, none of it's good. So last month, the Indonesian Psychiatrist Association actually went against the tide around the world to argue that homosexuality and gender dysphonia should be mental disorders that can be cured with treatment. It's crazy. In brief, there's a few fun things that have happened this week. These more positive news, shall we say, or some of them anyway. An entrepreneur in India has started a business setting up arranged same-sex marriages for gay clients looking for love.
And President Obama has met with LGBT activists during his visit to Cuba.
And Kansas, the USA, in the what the hell is going on section of the news, has introduced a new bill, the Student Physical Privacy Act, which guarantees that anyone who catches a trans person in the wrong toilet could sue their school for $2,500 for every time that they catch them doing it. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbo from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're listening to the Worldwide Wave. That's how people do it.
You're on Worldwide Wave, where tonight we're talking about the territory of Puerto Rico.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Yes, tonight we're off to Puerto Rico, which is in an unincorporated territory of the United States. Think of it as being a little bit like the Northern Territory here in Australia. It's a bit like that. They don't get to vote for the president, so... because they're not a state, but they are technically American. Like, my partner's actually from a Puerto Rican background. He's in New York. And one thing he hates is when Puerto Ricans... And he actually posted a super clip on Facebook recently of of people being referred to as, when you became an American, what's it like coming to America and Puerto Ricans being referred to as not being American? And it was this like supercut of all these references in the media and stuff. And at the end, it's like, we are American. It's crazy. Like, they have a governor, but they just don't have the same rights that a state has. It doesn't quite match up that way.
Yeah, I wonder if it carries on from that song in West Side Story. There's a song where they're singing, oh, I'm a Puerto Rican girl, I've come to America.
If you're talking about a musical on a gay and lesbian radio station, I suspect there are many listeners who know exactly what you're talking about and could probably do all the choreography for you as well.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
So tonight, of course, we're in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has been an interesting, it's quite a few developments in the last few months. Even just the last couple of years, the last few months even, about same-sex marriage in Puerto Rico. The first gay pride parade was in 1991.
Yeah, and that despite the fact that same-sex sexual activity was legalized only in 2003 and an equal age of consent given in 2004. But by 2015, so just last year, Puerto Rico had same-sex marriage, adoption rights, IVF access for lesbians, and anti-discrimination laws and employment.
Wow, what happened?
Well, basically, same-sex marriage was legalized because of the SCOTUS, or Supreme Court of the United States, ruling last year. And because Puerto Rico is, you know, unincorporated territory, they said that they happened to get the same rights. But it hasn't been quite so cut and dried. So basically what's happened is the U.S. Supreme Court ruling said that the marriage rights were extended to everyone, including Puerto Rico, but there's a circuit ruled that the U.S. Constitution same-sex marriage ban is unconstitutional. Now, in last month, the U.S. District Court Judge Juan Perez Jimenez said that the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling doesn't apply to Puerto Rico because it's not a state. That was the argument. So it affects the 50 states of the United States. Puerto Rico is not a state, ergo, same-sex marriage is not legal there. Now, the governor of Puerto Rico, he said that's a load of codswallop, except he said it in Spanish, and said that it's completely untrue and it doesn't alter the validity of marriages into which same-sex couples have entered in Puerto Rico. So there's actually a bit of a kerfuffle at the moment. So there's a LGBT group that has been fighting against the decision and saying, you know, we want some clarity here. But at the moment, to all intents and purposes, it is legal in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's great news that the country's moving forwards despite what we classically think of as it being a really Catholic country, and therefore we'd think it would be anti these laws.
Yeah, well, it's not all great news. There have been a number of murders of transsexual and transgender people in Puerto Rico and accusations that the authorities have not adequately responded. There were 30 murders in a decade from 2002 to 2012.
Whoa, that's a lot for such a tiny little island in the middle of, you know, middle of the ocean.
That's not something you want to be punching above your weight on.
That's probably because there's still no, like a lot of parts of the United States, there are still no anti-discrimination laws in goods and service provision or in hate speech. And there is no commercial surrogacy for gay male couples, and there is no right to legally change gender.
Yeah, that's true, but I think recently there's been a lot of extra rights on gender. In 2015, they did actually try and... They're currently trying to pass a law to give people the rights to change gender. And Puerto Rico's education minister announced changes to a school uniform code that lets boys wear skirts. I thought that was quite a weird way of putting that, but I think that's kind of on the route towards accepting transsexual and transgender.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's piecemeal, as it often is with our rights. You know, it's just one step at a time. So, yeah, it's like basically a judge has tried to reban same-sex marriage, but the governor vows it's here to stay. Who can say? And there is one, and this I thought was very interesting, there is one LGBTI radio program which has been running for 14 years.
Joy.
This is St. Elizabeth covering the Middle East for the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission on the World Wide Web.
Winner of over one dozen international festival awards, Mala Mala has been a huge success on the festival circuit. Now, it covers a wide spectrum of age and experience in its subjects, highs and lows of identifying as trans in a country where a macho Latino culture does hold sway, very much so. We spoke to the directors of the movie, and we asked the directors, Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini, what was their connection with the Puerto Rican trans community?
We chose Puerto Rico
ago, we talked about like a few different locations for where to potentially film a project like this. And, you know, Puerto Rico kind of unveiled itself as the most interesting of the potential locations, only because it's in like a very, you know, interesting geopolitical situation. It's not an independent nation, and it's not technically part of the United States. It's a commonwealth. It's a colony. So, you know, in terms of representation, in terms of rights, Puerto Rico is largely ignored. So we wanted to bring attention to that as well as this specific community on the island.
We saw a video of April performing drag, and I went to high school with April, and at that time she still wasn't a drag queen. And we were really amazed by the fact that she'd been able to develop this persona in an environment that this kind of art can provoke violence. So we thought it was really cool that she did that, and we reached out to her, and she kind of opened the doors for us to start exploring her community.
Tell us about some of the issues of social marginalization that Puerto Rico's trans community experiences.
There isn't much understanding for their identity on the island, you know. So for somebody like Pax to be walking around and identifying in the way that he does, it's very hard for people to understand where he's coming from, you know, when he uses a term like genderqueer, because there isn't much of an education on the island. So it leads to, you know, a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of miscommunication and a lot of hurt feelings. Not to mention the fact that, like, there is no real support structure in place for somebody like Pax to properly transition. So, you know, that in of itself kind of, it perpetuates this ignorance about the community on the island.
There seems to be a bit of a crossover between drag queens and trans. How does the local community view the difference?
Well, a lot of the words that we use to describe them, like the word transgender, transsexual, a lot of them didn't use them. But someone can exist as a transsexual and not necessarily be called a transsexual by their peers or their family. Someone like Pax, for example, is someone that through the internet started to learn the words to articulate something that represented how he felt. So what we found was that the communities in Puerto Rico are less separate and segregated than people expect them to be. Someone who identifies as a transsexual can also perform in drag, and someone who performs in drag may be taking their first steps to possibly taking hormones and becoming a woman.
Yeah, there's much more fluidity between like the various distinctions than I think people typically realize. The kind of like verbal technology that we have to describe such identities or such phenomena, you know, it's still evolving. So rather than kind of look at the cast of Mala Mala in terms of, you know, whether they're a drag queen or a transsexual, I always think of them in terms of shades or in terms of thinking of the transgender experience as something more of a spectrum. Even Ivana, like, she considers herself a transsexual, and so does Soraya. But there's a scene in the film where both of them talk about what that means, and it's revealed that both of them have very, very different understandings for what it means to be a transsexual woman in contemporary Puerto Rico.
Connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Tamás from Heartfelt Society, fighting for the human rights of the LGBTQI community in Hungary on the World Wide Web.
Tonight we're speaking to Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini, the directors of Mala Mala, which you can see at this year's MQFF. The one of the people featured in the movie ran for election in the Puerto Rican government. We asked how inspirational is a person like that to the local trans community.
I think unfortunately a lot of people in the community don't know their own history, because in Puerto Rico the trans history has always been kind of in the shadows. And if you lived in a place where you could access other people, some people who identify as trans in Puerto Rico live in a town where there's no place where trans people congregate. So I think, unfortunately, Soraya, while she's known by her friends and she has a sort of reputation around her, I don't think the younger generation really has access to any information that would tell her, oh, these are Soraya's achievements. I think, if anything, when we made Mala Mala, some people could actually get to know Soraya in a way that they hadn't seen before, even if they had heard of her once or seen her on the street. Like, if this was like the first time their history was, or the culture was even officially being talked about, as opposed to something that was always verbal. There's no mention of this unless you have some sort of physical contact with the community, or unless online on Facebook, you're friends with one of the people who is part of the community.
And I mean, your question also relates to like issues of colonialism too, because it's like, you know, when we think of LGBT history, everybody talks, at least stateside, everybody talks about Stonewall in 1969 in downtown Manhattan, but Stonewall wasn't in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So, you know, Soraya has kind of written this autobiography as an attempt to document her own experience and contribute to Puerto Rican queer history in the ways that she can.
Most of your participants are male to female trans people or drag artists. There is one trans man. How is the experience different for somebody transitioning from female to male in Puerto Rico?
Well, I think it seems to be a lot lonelier. We had visited a bunch of outreach centers on the island looking for somebody who identified similarly to PACs. And nobody at any of the outreach centers knew of any trans masculine people on the island. And we ended up finding PACs through Instagram. And, you know, we went down, and PACs also didn't know of anybody else like him. And again, there were no centers, there were no doctors to help somebody like PACs transition. And I think generally, you know, if you're trying to recreate or reimagine yourself as a masculine person or as a male person, there are certain characteristics that you might ascribe to that are going to be different than if you are going the opposite direction of becoming a feminine or female type of person. And I think that comes with maybe a more quieter, like masculine, more stern attitude. They tend to be a little less outspoken in the community and a little less flamboyant. For PAX, it seems as though he kind of aspires to a quieter life, you know, that isn't so public. And I think that seems to be a commonality with the trans masculine people that we've met since making the film as well.
Also, like, appearance is only one part of how a man expresses his masculinity in a place like Puerto Rico. Gender is embedded so deeply in the culture and in the religion of that most people practice in the culture. So being a man in Puerto Rico is not just having muscles, because it's not. Not everyone has muscles. Not everyone has this, not everyone has that. But it's more embedded in, for example, the relationships in the household with the wife and the expectations of the man and what a young boy aspires to and the kind of man that his father teaches him in Puerto Rico to be. And the way that he relates to other people. There's so many ways that when you live in Puerto Rico that you see people express their masculinity that are not just physical, that when you're someone who wants to transition into a male-appearing person, then you have to take all these things into account. Because if you put on a beard, no one in Puerto Rico is going to be like, oh, that's a man. It's so much more about like their essence.
That's Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini. They're the directors of Mala Mala, which you can see at this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival here on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9, where we go around the world one country at a time, in this case, one territory at a time, in Puerto Rico. I thought that was really interesting, especially when he talks about how, in some ways, they're the first, I suppose, media in history to really delve into the topic of transgender people in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
A new frontier.
Yeah, it very much is. I thought that was quite fascinating. So it's not a part of the culture that does get, I suppose, how can I put it, a lot of oxygen in Puerto Rico.
I'd imagine be suppressed more than anything or kind of hidden.
Well, I suppose to provide some context, Puerto Rico has a lot of problems at the moment. And one of them is that they owe the United States $71 billion in US money. Now, Puerto Rico is a very small island, the capital is San Juan. They're not very, they don't have a lot of money. Most of their money goes to government services. And now a huge percentage of it, like $1.5 billion a year, has to go back to paying the United States. And it all has to do, it's a 40-year history of bonds being issued because Puerto Rico is regarded or was legally announced it's not a state of the United States, it's an unincorporated territory. They were exempt from a lot of the taxes that would be otherwise applied to states in the United States. So there were no city taxes. Or my partner's in New York and he pays city taxes, like New York taxes, state taxes, and federal taxes. So when he gets his his paycheck every week. It's got all three of them listed. Puerto Rico doesn't have those because it's not technically a state. The problem is that that meant it was very attractive for investors. So Puerto Rico would take their money and give them bonds. And they just kept doing it for four decades from 1973 until 2013. And then when they owed $71 billion, it all just collapsed in a big heap. So Puerto Rico has a lot of problems. And, you know, someone said to me recently, would you like to go to Puerto Rico? And I said, I'd love to. I've never been carjacked before. It sounds great. So
do you think, Dean, it's perhaps one of those cases where, you know, one of those places that's got so much going on that getting some issues, I guess, in the public domain is difficult just because, you know, there's other stuff going down.
Absolutely. There's not a lot of, like I was saying before, oxygen for this sort of thing in the media. So that's why Mala Mala, which I have to say, we should ask about the title because my Spanish is not good, but I thought Mala meant mailbag. So, yeah, 100%. You speak Spanish, though, don't
Mala
you?
Mala means bad, just bad. So bad, bad.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Spanish has got gender, so it's particularly female bad.
Oh, okay. Bad, bad.
Bad, bad.
Oh, nice.
Or it's like a female. So.
Yeah. Well, look, it's very challenging for everyone in Puerto Rico. Crime is quite high. Businesses are not doing well. They're basically all closed. Tourism is not the, I suppose, the, how can I put it, the lifeline they expected. Because, again, there's that pesky thing about being carjacked and shot and stuff, and people don't want to spend their tourist dollars.
Yeah, that extra crime from the poverty.
Well, it doesn't really help. But, you know, people don't exactly want to go to Puerto Rico and spend their holiday dollars on getting shot, so, or getting carjacked, or whatever it is. Carjacking is very popular. So, yeah, look, it's a real challenge. Something else they said that I thought was interesting was that there's not much in the way of, they don't really have doctors to help people when they're transitioning.
Yeah, I guess if there's not a big culture of it, and if this kind of stuff hasn't been talked about there, unless a doctor is trans themselves, they might not know anything about it. Your local GP is not going to know anything. They might not know where to turn to for advice.
Look, I suppose another challenge is no one's got any money. So transitioning is expensive. Like, it's often a huge cost for people who want to transition. And whether they, you know, whether they have surgery or not, even just transitioning your whole sort of lifestyle is very expensive. And many people in Puerto Rico just would not be able to afford it.
Yeah, and I guess they don't have, you know, with the US healthcare, I assume they have that healthcare also, in which case there's a...
Not really, no.
Well, like, as in the US doesn't really have a healthcare,
that's
one.
That's exactly it, yeah.
So there's not much help from the state anyway.
So not a great place to be. I mean, you know, a topic that doesn't get the exposure it deserves, and then there's just not the facility or the amenity, even if perhaps you are in a privileged situation, you still just, there isn't just that knowledge out there. It's just not there. So I mean, geez, you're almost forced to have to seek help elsewhere, leave the territory and you know, perhaps go to another place which is going to make transitioning or finding out about transitioning a little bit easier.
And that's very common. Unfortunately, like a lot of other countries that aren't very much fun to be in, there's a real brain drain. So a lot of people are actually leaving the country, territory, that's right. They're actually leaving Puerto Rico. So generally, as soon as people, you know, can scrape the money together, they are out of there. They are on a plane to Miami the second they can. So, yeah, it's very common. It's a real shame.
And we've just had a message in from Florence. Hey, Worldwide Waivers, do they experience discrimination from gay conservatives, i.e. homicons?
That's a really good question.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Andre Duplessis from the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, speaking from Geneva on the World Wide Wave.
We've had a few messages in. Good evening, team. We're in the audience of Q&A last week. The person sitting next to me was quite ignorant about transgendered people. We have challenging views here as well amongst conservatives. Sigh. Yes, unfortunately.
Oh, do they mean ignorant as in they were like, oh, what are they? Or ignorant as in they were like, hang them high. Like, I'm off to Saudi Arabia. Like, I want more details.
And also another message in, learning so much tonight. Good show. Well, we're glad you're enjoying it.
We do try.
Mulla Mulla was funded by donations and crowdfunding. We asked what that experience was like for directors Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini.
It's been like a little bit of everything. You know, like this is our first film, and I know that for us it feels in many ways like it's our first child. So we felt a lot of different things about this process the entire way through. And for every success that the film has had, there's always been something else that has made it more difficult or set us back. Overall, I mean, it's been the most wonderful, like, educational experience of my life. Traveling around with the film for, like, the past 2 years has been unbelievable, and meeting people, you know, and talking with people about the film, seeing their reactions to it has been miraculous, and, you know, it's something that I want to continue doing for the rest of my life. It's also important to say, I think, that it's very, very hard to get films like this made. You know, we didn't turn to Kickstarter because that was our first option. It's hard to find money for films that, you know, are about queer brown people, you know, who speak a different language other than English and that live on one of the last colonies in the Western Hemisphere.
I did actually read that you were having a bit of difficulty even getting it onto some of the queer film festival circuit. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it premiered at Tribeca in 2014, and it won an award at Tribeca. It did very well here. And then it got rejected from both Frameline and Outfest, which are the two biggest queer film festivals in the United States. And that was definitely something that we weren't anticipating, especially with the crew behind the project. I mean, this is our first film, but the producers behind it, you know, they're very well established, and they have a long track record of creating great queer media. And it's a complicated situation, I think, when you're programming a queer film festival, you know, because I feel like 75% of those films are catering to a specific letter in the LGBTQAI acronym, you know. And most of them are going to be gay, male-led films. And then you have some lesbian dramas in there, then maybe like a bisexual or two character. And then at the very end of the list seems to be trans media representing the trans experience. So when you're programming a film festival, it really seems to be like, we've already programmed our trans documentary for the year. You know, we're sorry. And these are the kind of the responses that we would get. And it's like, you look at these programs and they have three films like about gay white men playing back to back, and it doesn't make any sense. The reality is like there isn't some like queer independent film community like waiting to embrace you when you make a queer film. Like it doesn't exist, and it's competitive as well. You know, so people are really looking for that edge to get programmed and stuff like that. All of the things that made Mulla Mulla special seemed to certain people, it seemed to have made it an obstacle for them. You know, like the fact that it is about queers of color, it is bilingual, it does take place on an island that not many people know about. So it was complicated. It was a complicated time for sure.
What have the stars of your documentary had to say about the finished product?
I mean, we've seen the movie many times with them at different festivals. We've been traveling around with them. I think one of the most memorable moments was the first time they saw it together in New York at the Tribeca Festival. A lot of them didn't know each other's stories up close like that. They couldn't imagine what each other's realities were. So during the screening, they were actually like talking to each other and like laughing together and like making jokes, like crying, you know, just starting to actually empathize for each other. And they realized by watching the movie that they were fragmented. Not necessarily just like by drag or trans, but also by age, by socioeconomic level, by town or city that they live in, by goal, by interest. I think they started to really understand each other on a different level.
And now they all hang out without us. Like now like they're all tight and like they're friends and they get together. And it's cool when, like, you know, when we hear them in interviews, like, when we see them on talk shows and stuff, and, like, they talk about Mulla Mulla, like, being, like, their film, you know? Like, it feels as though, like, all of them feel some sort of ownership
over the product. And like for us, that's really, it's awesome that they feel as though it can be theirs, because it is theirs, you know, it is for them.
The film is Mala Mala. It's one of the lead documentaries at this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival. The directors, Dan Sickles and Antonio Santini, thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Well, that was fascinating, I thought. I really found that interesting. And I love what they said about, or rather, I don't love it, but I thought it was very interesting what they said about how they try and get their movie in festivals. Oh, we already have a trans movie. It's like, even in festivals and stuff, trans people are marginalised.
Yeah, and even in queer festivals, you know, minorities are kind of, you know, against other minorities. The fact it's brown and transgender and not in English all counts against it, whereas it should be a joy that there's this diversity.
Subtitles? Ew! No one wants to see that.
You know, it's, yeah,
well, apparently
crazy.
They do. MQFF is kicking off soon.
Indeed they are. And if you do want to see Mala Mala, you can find it on the MQFF website.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
A big, big thank you to our wonderful guests and talking about their great movie, Mala Mala, at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Also a thank you to all those people who've interacted with us on Facebook in the past week. That's W3Joy on Facebook. A big thank you as well to the lovely Gordon at the front counter.
You've been listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.